All right. So I'm a retina specialist by training and by practice, and I'm really interested to see how we can deliver healthcare better to the population that we serve. This is my research team that we've put together. We work with various groups in the Rochester area and hope to work with people around the country. I don't have any financial disclosures. I'm a volunteer unpaid grader for IPACS, which is the largest, probably, teleophthalmology program in the United States. TeleEyeCare is my program in the Rochester area. It's funded by a Greater Rochester Health Foundation grant. We're going to go over the current surveillance for diabetic retinopathy and the need for improvement on this. Teleophthalmology is a potential solution. Cover a little bit about my program, and then talk about the one-year preliminary screens. And if we have time, talk about population health initiatives that we're developing. So let's go to surveillance. Well, diabetes is an epidemic, pandemic. It's going to be a big problem, increasing by 50%. We all know that. Diabetes leads to vascular disease, and diabetic retinopathy is one of the most feared complications from its effect on vision loss. Amputation is the other cause of fear in these patients. Diabetic retinopathy is going to increase by 50% by 2020, as what the projections say back in 2004. So it is a serious public health problem. Annual dilated eye exams, as we've all talked about, save vision with timely interventions. 95% of vision loss is preventable with these interventions, and has been advocated since the 1990s. So this is not something we've just recently discovered, but we've known this for over 20 years now. Detection can save vision through early identification of vision-threatening retinopathy, or retinopathy that's even before the vision-threatening stage, can get people to modify their behaviors, because diabetes is all about taking better care of yourselves and achieving better glycemic, blood pressure, and blood lipid status. A picture's worth a thousand words. I routinely go over pictures of patients' eyes on their every visit, especially diabetics on their annual visit. So it's really important to emphasize what's going on in your body. And as you know, the eye is the only place where you can see vascular damage caused by diabetes. Also, detection leads to timely treatment, and a lot of these treatments are now vision-saving. We don't have to do full pan-retinal laser anymore. We're finding that the anti-VEGF injections that we use can actually reduce and prevent blindness by reducing the amount of proliferative diabetic retinopathy and macular edema in these folks, but they're very expensive, so prevention is still the key. Diabetes in the United States is about 10% overall, but there are some areas of the country that are more than others. Again, we talked about the eye exam rate annually being about 50-60%, but less for the more vulnerable populations. Rochester, New York is about 10% greater Rochester population, about 20% in the inner cities that have diabetes. So what is the state of eye exams in Rochester? Well, we looked at three federally qualified health clinics in two settings, in one neighborhood setting, and two of the clinics were in a hospital-based setting in inner city Rochester. We found that the neighborhood settings were doing pretty well compared to the hospital clinics, but still underperforming 38% of the annual eye exam rate. The hospital clinics about 10-20%. So there was still a lot of room for improvement in these areas. The American Academy of Ophthalmology did have an initiative to increase annual screening back in 2000. But it was ineffective, and it was started actually in 1990. It was a 10-year effort. It was ineffective because at that time they didn't have a registry. They couldn't track these folks. They didn't know who were diabetics or who needed eye exams because, again, the disconnect between primary care and eye care. HEDIS reporting was new at that time and was not well incentivized to meet these criteria. There was lack of patient outreach and engagement, minimal engagement, of course, of the primary care providers. They're very busy. Eye care is the last thing often that they're concerned about. So many other things going on. And then lack of targeting resident education to teach new initiates in the medicine profession, both in ophthalmology and in general medicine, endocrinology, and other subspecialties, that eye care is important. There's also lack of organizational support and oversight of the primary care folks. They have to do everything. You know, you're relying on them. And how can we work with care management and other teams to make this better? So telemedicine could be a solution. digital photography and internet has come a long way in the last 15 years. A study done by my former chairman at the University of Rochester showed that looking at the DRS, the diabetic retinopathy study, photos, a 30-degree posterior pole view has pretty good sensitivity and specificity for disease. If you look at an older onset population, the type 2 population, only a quarter of the population has to be referred for retinopathy. Most people don't have retinopathy or have mild forms. Teleophthalmology can also overcome barriers that are there for screening. Primary care is not equipped to examine the eyes. Of all the metrics that they are required to do, that's one metric they cannot meet on their own. Patients fear drops. We had a consent form that we had. You may be dilated. Patients refuse to sign the consent form. It's a big problem. Additional costs of exam and time. They have to take off time from work. They're dilated. They can't see for a few hours, and basically they've lost the day. They have to go to another provider. It's problematic. U.S. Eye doctors are short supply, and they're not well distributed. So reaching these folks are a big problem. And documentation, we found, is a big issue. The notes are not coming back to the primary care folks, and the primary care folks are not in control of that. And that's one thing that they're sort of missing on and they feel helpless about. And how can the eye care folks, the vision care folks, improve on this? Well, teleophthalmology could be a way. Uses non-midriatic cameras, they're FDA approved. They can be set up in the primary care office and operated by primary care clinic staff. You use a lot of the central reading center, so you do need eye care input. You do need ophthalmology or optometry input in this, and you can use these central reading sources to evaluate images and report findings by eye care providers who are licensed in the state that you're providing the service in, this patient's in. Images can educate patients, and it does meet the HEDIS criteria. So globally, there's so many programs. We listed a few of those. STARS all over the world. There's 100 million with diabetic retinopathy of a population of 300 million diabetics, about one third. And in the UK, do their screening programs. They have now ended that diabetic retinopathy being the highest leading cause of blindness in their country. So it is possible through screening efforts, and not just teleophthalmology, but other efforts as well. So talk a little bit about my program. It's a pilot program, just started in the last year or so, got up and running. So why are we doing this? Well, we basically got an institutional review board approved 3-year telemedicine study that was supported by a local foundation to utilize telemedicine to improve screening. So first, it builds infrastructure and implements surveillance for retinopathy. It increases annual retinal surveillance. We're targeting 80%. It's pretty ambitious because I really didn't know what the rates were actually when I was applying for this grant, because getting data has been a big issue in this whole study. We want to link eye care with primary care because eye care is primary care. I mean, you have to really hit that home because I'm seen as a specialist. And yes, I'm a specialist. I realize that, but I do see a lot of people that have basic medical problems in my office, and I'm my hands are tied because I don't really treat that at all. And the primary care folks, they don't look at the eyes at all. So how do we combine each other's efforts and form a team? So this is our team. It's basically the need and receptive clinical atmosphere of these healthcare settings. The Rochester Regional Health System is a new accountable care organization in Rochester, along with the university's accountable care organization. So we have two main health systems. The University of Rochester, we have the expertise and infrastructure for providing eye care to these folks. Our residents go to a lot of the clinics that do treat the folks from the federally qualified health centers. Rochester Institute of Technology is also there. It's the only program in the country that offers a degree-granting program that incorporates ophthalmic photography. So we have a lot of experts in ophthalmic imaging in Rochester. So it's a great environment. We're at Category 2, ATA teleophthalmology category. This is a standard of care, of providing teleophthalmology services that the American Telemedicine Association came out with. And so we try to follow these guidelines and be one that accurately determines the presence of sight-threatening retinopathy. So we have a STORM Forward program, and the teleophthalmology program, we hope, will close the loop on care for these folks. So first, it's a primary care intake. You identify the patients, you assess their vision, you take photos of their retina. Then you forward them to the reading center at the Flom Eye Institute, where I'm at, and I read it as the image reader for this program. I generate a report in this image management system, and it goes back to the primary care folks. It also goes back to the ophthalmologist, optometrist. Due to Stark laws, I cannot refer these patients to myself. And you have to be very careful about that in doing this. And in England and other places, that's not the case. So there may be more incentive for people to do it on their own. So I work with the Rochester General Hospital ophthalmology team, which is separate from the university's team, although our residents are the ones who serve that office, just to keep everything kosher. And then we also want to get a report to the patient. We're really developing this as well over time and make sure that the patients are keeping up their follow-up appointments. So our imaging instruments that we use is we use the Zeiss VisuCam. We found that that's the most reliable source of taking pictures, easiest to use for folks. The other handheld devices, they're less expensive. Some of the other devices are less expensive, often require dilation, and they're harder to use. You don't get a consistent image. And our image quality rate is fairly good. It's over 90%, so that's pretty good. So we use an image management system. We go with Sonimed Escalon, who develops our access system that is used in other areas as well, and they help us with their image management. It's part of research studies, so we use our Reading Center research resources. We have a HIPAA-compliant tracking system where we follow these patients. I try to hide as much personal information there, but we try to follow these folks, tell the doctors what pathology that they have in the primary care offices. These reports have to be acknowledged by the primary care folks and the ophthalmology or eye care provider as well, and then an appointment has to be made and followed up on. So it's a way to track patients through the system, and we're slowly initiating this more and more to see how we're doing over the next course of time, another year, so we'll see if a lot of these guys follow up or not. We send a report that is acceptable for HEDIS criteria to meet the reporting metrics. Sorry, the image didn't come out too well here in the light, but we kind of show at least the primary care folks what retinopathy is in a lot of their patients, although, you know, 70% don't have retinopathy, so we try to educate them other ways about what it could look like in these folks. But we still, as ophthalmologists or eye care providers, want to be the ones reading them and be in charge. Some other programs have gotten primary care folks to read them. We feel that there needs to be some oversight still in the eye care world to do that. Programs are not just with me. There are a lot more advanced programs out there. In fact, you know, IPACS and Wills and Jocelyn, they're doing a lot of great work. A lot of venture capitalist-funded companies are there. Notably Hubble Telemedical, down in the Southeast, where you saw there's a huge concentration of diabetic patients there. So it's a growing telemedicine network, and maybe we can share each other's resources and knowledge, but, you know, when it comes down to a business model or business plan, it's very low on sharing and collaboration. So that's where we are at this. So what have we done for this last year? We screened about 420 patients overall, and I just broke it down with the neighborhood clinic and the hospital clinic sort of paired together. You can see that we got to about 50 to 60% of our patients, with a lot of them being undocumented, having undocumented eye exams in the hospital setting. So they're less tracking, less adept at tracking their paperwork, I think, because a lot of them have a lot of overturn with their clinicians because they're resident run, and it's just a lot more chaotic in terms of their and their way they operate there, because there's too many moving parts, I think, whereas the neighborhood program is a little bit more consistent, and they sort of know what's going on. With the EMR system, hopefully these things will change over time. The no-show rates were only about a quarter in the neighborhood population versus a third in the hospital, and again, the undocumented rates were much higher in the hospital setting. As far as did we improve retinopathy surveillance? Well, it was easiest to get data from the neighborhood clinic, which is the Clinton Family Clinic, and they were started at 38%. And when we looked at it afterwards in a year, they went up to 79%, with a lot of that being folks who either had undocumented exams, but a small percentage of those, but mostly those patients who were motivated now to go to their eye care provider because their primary care folks were talking about the necessity of getting an eye exam, because they were also more aware of, wow, this is really important. We really need to get this metric up. We really need to focus on this. So that was on their radar screen. So that also helped in this. So these programs not only screen people, but also generate more education interest in that area. So out of the 420 patients, a half were female, and 94 actually had some type of insurance that did pay for eye care provision there. pretty much normally distributed age range there. More African Americans than whites in the hospital clinics. The neighborhood clinic was in a heavily Hispanic area, so a higher Hispanic population and Spanish-speaking population area. So when we do our patient education, we also are doing it in Spanish as well, too. And one of our healthcare project coordinators does speak fluent Spanish and is actually from that neighborhood. So engaging in the neighborhood, community engagement, very important in all of this. What do we find? Well, 4% of the population had vision-threatening retinopathy. It includes diabetic macular edema, so about 1% of those who had moderate non-proliferative retinopathy. But again, 75% didn't have any retinopathy that we found on our screening. Neighborhood clinics tend to do a little bit better than the hospital clinics. Hospital clinics had more moderate and mild disease. So as far as vision-threatening, they're about the same, but there was a little more risk in the hospital population. Now, why could that be? Well, follow-up could be an issue. Maybe we're not following up, but we looked at follow-up to eye care providers, and it was basically 50-50, because after we would screen them, we would refer everybody to an eye care provider, not knowing when our funding would run out eventually, because it's only a three-year project, so we wanted to make sure everybody was in the system. But the real reason here, I would think, is the hemoglobin A1C, and you can see that in the hospital clinics that there were a larger percentage of population had poorly controlled hemoglobin or glycemic control, so hemoglobin A1C was higher in the hospital population overall. So 62% being above 8, and 8 sort of the cutoff in the eye care world, where you get a higher risk of developing diabetic retinopathy in those who have higher than 8 hemoglobin A1C versus those who are lower. And 48% of those in the neighborhood populations are over this. So this was statistically significant and chi-square test. And again, the risk for other vascular complications from diabetes also increase at that level too. So they're not only risk for eye disease, but risk for other problems. And we really try to address this with the patients through patient education sessions and provider education sessions to drive that point home. Vision acuity, they have pretty good vision acuity, and they're better seeing eye, with about 20% of the population having low vision defined as below 20/40. The next steps are really sustainability, and that has to do with state mandates. New York does not mandate telemedicine. California and other states do. It's a little easier place to work with. Mixed of payers, responsible for population. We haven't really converted to population health as far as the way we reimburse, so that's going to be an issue. Priorities of primary care. We found the neighborhood clinic who really wanted to champion our cause. Hospital clinic, a little less so. So this is what we're dealing with. Business model of local health system. How is it going to be? Fee for service? Is it going to be part of an ACO coverage? Are there going to be some advantages by meeting the HEDIS metrics? Are they going to get some reimbursement from that, from CMS? Those are all things to look at. Current fee-for-service codes are multiple. We use an ophthalmology, the 92250 for our patients, but we haven't started billing for this service. Probably end up with a 92227 code, which is a lot less in its remuneration. If you're in Hawaii, if you're golden, you're $60, you get back for this. So, again, the state mandate was there, and they really did a good job for doing this. So just really quick, integrated population health approach, a little outside of the topic. What does this all mean in a system? So we work right now in silos, right? Medicare, medical care, and ophthalmic care, and how does that work throughout the system? What we need to do is more integrated level here with screening, education, and power and prevention in the primary care setting. And what we're trying to do is we're creating an integrated system of healthcare. We provide surveillance, prevention, education, care, and support to screen, educate, and empower the populations to achieve better health, because eye care is not only taking good care of your eyes, but you're taking good care of your body through nutrition, good blood pressure control, good control of cardiovascular risks. So all those things are going to make populations healthy. So I think vision care is a way to actually address a lot of the ills that we have in health. And if you can get people seeing better and taking better care of their eyes, you'll get better care of their bodies as well. So this is my busy model here of our system. So just to walk you really quickly, there's a vertical integration model with all the eye care specialties sort of lined up and working together, with the last being community engagement. There's a horizontal integration with the ACOs and the I folks with the referrals. Diabetes is the biggest problem still. That's the way to really get hold of primary cares and get them interested. get them interested in this whole process, because diabetes leads to retinopathy, cataract, and glaucoma risk, and it's a metric for their annual eye exam that they need to meet. So again, pediatric and refraction tends to be a big issue, and then you have the other eye diseases epidemiologically that are there. Risk analysis of what population are at risk, and public health and epidemiology all need to work together in all of this, and really emphasize eye care as primary care, and how do we build this model. So just to look at our dashboard really quick, so I took this from the primary care providers at the University of Rochester. We have about 12,000 diabetics in our system out of 226,000 lives. And they're meeting all the metrics except for eye care at the end there, 52%. So they're not meeting. So we really need to tackle this in our population as well. And this is our population health framework. So this is our management framework for the data management, with a lot of the data sources coming in through claims, clinical, cost data, and moving on up. And it's really a way to integrate all this data management. I'm really happy to see this morning a lot of people are working with health integrated care systems and sharing data. That's very important as we move forward. Without data, without outcomes, you know, we can fund all we want, but we really don't know what we're doing. With that, I thank you, and I thank my team for helping me in this cause. Happy to take any questions. So we ask everybody if they have an ophthalmologist. We're doing it in one ACL system, a Rochester Regional Health System, and they have an ophthalmology department. So we give all the names to that person, that clinic basically, and they follow up on the patient. So far, we've gotten about 80% of the patients scheduled to come in, and I said 50% no-show rate. So it's still that to contend with. But at least we have one eye care provider. Moving forward, we want to have patients get assigned eye care providers without ask the question, and then if you don't have an eye care provider, you'll be assigned it, and they'll be part of that tracking system, and they'll get the reports directly to them on email, alert at least. Yeah.
For the clinician in the PCP office who's taken in, what level of training do they need to operate
with? 2 weeks worth of just somebody watching them and helping them to do it. That's basically what we have in 2 weeks. Meaning actually, it's really like two to three days because they only were screening a couple times a week. So within a few days, usually they say you need 100 photos underneath your belt to get really really proficient and really comfortable at it. That's what people are finding. So it doesn't have to be 100 patients under photos. So we always say apparent macular edema, so we use surrogates for that. So we use hard exudates. That's what we're really using for it. If you have a stereo photo, you can, but we haven't gone that far with the clinic staff to teach them how to do stereo. OCT is being used more and more. As if it gets cheaper, then it'll look for macular edema. Again, it's a low percentage of the population, so hopefully we're not missing so many people. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Duke has a program in that, actually. Sorry.
You mentioned that you felt in your program strongly that it has to be ophthalmology or optometry that's creating the photos.
Yeah.
As your program grows and you get more lives being screened, do you consider that to be a barrier to meet those people? Because in a lot of the world, they are using the photographer themselves as the grader.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, those programs over time, reading centers use people who graduated high school without much further training. So that's true, but you're dealing still with healthcare, so there has to be an overseer. What a lot of these programs are relying on the primary care. I don't know how much oversight necessarily they get provided. IPACs, they do have a system where they do audit these providers and make sure that they're doing a good job. So you need more of oversight. So not saying they can't do it, but they also, you can't bill for it then either, right? So
it won't count for HEDIS.
Yes, it won't work for HEDIS either. So.